Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 169, recorded Thursday, November 12th, 2020. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: Holiday Gift Guide for the Pandemic Traveler, and End of Year Don't Leave Me Offers. No travel since the last episode, but I've got to tell you, a November week with temperatures in the 70s felt like I was in someplace other than Chicago. But the weather reverted to the mean yesterday, which chased me back indoors to finish this podcast, so good for you. So the weather last week was a boon to Chicago's bars and restaurants. The week before, the governor banned indoor service again as COVID cases began to rise. So this bonus week of sort of warm, sunny weather just gifted them with really some needed outdoor dining revenue. Last Friday, a friend of mine and I met for lunch at a neighborhood place that was actually able to expand their outdoor seating by putting tables on the sidewalk in front of the shuttered retail store next door to them. So a friend of mine and I showed up at about 11:30 in the morning. The tables were full by noon. One of the things we talked about, this friend of mine and I, as we were drinking some beers, was travel. How over the past 8 months, we'd sort of more or less adjusted to just about all of the COVID restrictions, the masks, the social distancing, all of it, except for travel. I mean, yes, we'd done car trips and long weekends, but we missed the big trips. I'd just canceled our Thanksgiving trip to London, and he's trying to think through their annual Christmas trip in December down to Mexico. Now, I know this is definitely a first world problem for folks who've had families, friends, and even themselves hit with COVID, so I'm not trying to overplay this, but as the end of the year approaches and I'm starting to hear more public health experts reset expectations for the worse, saying, well, it's probably more like the end of 2021 or maybe into the beginning of 2022 before things will start feeling normal. I don't know. For people who love travel, I don't think they're going to want to put travel on hold for another year or two. You start hearing about people looking for openings, Mexico, Costa Rica, as they also work through and think about their own personal risk profiles. Maybe United Airlines' testing program that they're trialing on flights to Hawaii and London, maybe that's part of the answer. Certainly Pfizer's release of preliminary vaccine results on Monday certainly got everybody hopeful again. Now, I don't think anyone expects or actually really wants an immediate snapback to 2019, but I got to tell you, the ability to stretch things a bit more in that direction would be greatly appreciated. So, following up, first a quick program note. As I tweak things with the underlying Travel Commons infrastructure, the audio file, the RSS feed, the website, I'll talk about those changes at the end of the podcast so I don't muck up sort of the main content that you guys come to listen to with a bunch of inside baseball sort of podcast stuff. If you're not interested, you can always skip to the end really without missing anything. I will say, though, that I was pleasantly surprised when I looked at the Apple Podcast stats showing that about 80% of you stay through the end of an episode. I fully expected to see at least 50% of folks hitting the skip to next podcast button when they heard the Pictures of You song clip. So thanks to everybody for sticking all the way through. And hey, congratulations to Emily Thomas, our guest on the August episode, for winning the, Leverhulme, L-E-V-E-R-H-U-L-M-E, Leverhulme prize, whatever it was a prize last month. The prize, according to their website, recognizes the achievement of outstanding researchers across a broad range of disciplines whose work has already attracted international recognition and whose future career is exceptionally promising. I interviewed Emily about her book, The Meaning of Travel, Philosophers Abroad, again in that August episode. It's just a great person and had a great time talking to her. So, couldn't be more well-deserved. Actually, now that I think about it, I may go back and listen to that interview again. I got an email from Marriott last week announcing their work-from-hotel offerings. Now, we've talked about this trend, this work-from-hotel bit, over the past couple of episodes. First, as a way for downtown hotels to do really something, anything, about their low occupancy rates. And then in the last episode, with the FBI's cybersecurity advisory that they sent out to people moving from work at home to work at hotels. Covered that in the last episode. So Marriott's Day Pass offering gives you a room from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., includes Wi-Fi, bottled water, and also lounge access if you've got the right level of status in Marriott's Bonvoy program. They're piloting it in Atlanta, Dallas, New York, and Phoenix in the U.S. Scanning the pricing, the range looked to be about 60 to 90 bucks, you know, for the day, though the Phoenician in Scottsdale did price out at 260 bucks for 12 hours. If you looked hard in some of these cities, you'd probably get a day pass at a co-working place for cheaper. But if you can't expense it, it seems like the Marriott offer is probably not a bad deal, especially for those days when, say, you've got a big sales presentation or maybe you're running a webinar and you need kind of that guaranteed alone time to focus on the preparation and then certainly be by yourself for the delivery. And all of that in front of a video backdrop that's not your closet door, or maybe a semi-made bed, or having random people walking past you or skating past you in a WeWork. Hilton and Hyatt are also offering work-from-hotel plans, but they've each got different spins. Hilton's Workspaces will give you 10,000 honors points for your first booking, and unlike Marriott, it seems to be across all of their properties. Now, having said that, it doesn't feel quite as put together as Marriott's. You have to ring up the property directly to book your day. So it looks like Hilton hasn't been able to figure out a way to shoehorn this day rate concept into their reservation system. Work from Hyatt, on the other hand, isn't so much a WeWork replacement as a digital nomad trial package with its 7-night minimum stay requirement and a focus on resort locations like the Grand Hyatts in Kauai or Vail, Colorado. Kind of the complete opposite of spending 12 hours in a room at the Marriott by DFW. They all feel a bit toe in the water, all these offerings, a bit opportunistic in their own way. It'd be interesting to see how long they last. At the beginning of this week, Candid Viest, a cybersecurity researcher who joined us last year in episode 151 to talk about hotel websites that leaked data, well, Candid tweeted out a link to yet another hotel data breach. This time, it was a channel management software company. Channel management is something that hotels use to automate the task of updating room availability and rates across all of the online booking sites that they put the rooms on. So sites like Expedia and Booking.com and Hotels.com and on and on. There's quite a number of them, and it can be quite a bit of manual work because they've all got their own different ways that they want to see rates and rooms and things like that. So these channel managers are pretty valuable for the modern revenue management practices of a hotel. Anyhow, it turns out that this channel manager Prestige Software stored 24 gigabytes of names and emails and credit card data and reservation records, 10 million log files going back to 2013, in a misconfigured Amazon Web Services S3 bucket, which is, in layman's terms, just kind of a storage space on Amazon's cloud. One of the headlines from the pandemic is that companies have massively accelerated moving from their own data centers to cloud services like Amazon and Microsoft. But sometimes it feels like that speed of migration has overrun the skills of the team supporting it. So what can you do about it? In this case, really not much. You would have booked your room on, say, Expedia or Trivago and really not known anything and not needed to know anything about something called a channel manager piping your data down to the hotel. We've talked about these breaches in so many past episodes, and what I've said then so many times still stands. You need to be realistic. It's not if your personal data will get breached, it's when. So if you can, put your online purchases on a separate card and watch those transactions on the bank's website or mobile app so you can quickly shut it down if you see something that doesn't look right. I remember one time years ago, many years ago, because it was a Northwest Air flight, so pre-Delta merger, I'm seeing this Northwest Air flight from Tokyo to Beijing, and it showed up on one of my credit cards. Now, that struck me as odd because I was in Chicago and had no plans to be in Asia. I immediately called the bank, disputed the charge, and they immediately closed down the card. The interesting thing is that the crook had booked an economy class ticket. You'd think if you're going to risk it, go big. Book the front of the plane, like business class, if not first. The quarantine theater we talked about in the last episode just keeps keeping on. Chicago now has 43 states on its quarantine list, 31 of which have lower COVID rates than Chicago. And I guess in an admission that no one's really paying any attention, they're moving from updating their quarantine list weekly to every other week. I guess that's because there's not many more states they can add. New York, on the other hand, just sort of gave up on its quarantine list altogether when COVID rates in neighboring Connecticut and New Jersey qualified them for New York's list. Governor Cuomo says there'll be no quarantine list, there'll be no metrics. Now they've just shifted to everybody needs to test negative, except for people coming in from those adjacent states, Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, because, look, at some point, you just got to be realistic, especially in the face of this, I don't know, what is it, a third wave? I've just lost count. And then finally, just to show how deeply all of this, the quarantine, the lack of travel, has kind of gotten to me, here's a fun game I now play with my Google Mini.
Hey, Google, what's the weather in London?
Right now in London, it's 56 degrees and cloudy. Tonight, the forecast is around 53 with rain.
So if you couldn't tell, what happened is I dug into the Google Home app and found where I could change the voice of the Google Assistant. So, you know, what you heard there is I switched the voice over to what they call British Racing Green to check on the weather in London, and then click on Sydney Harbour Blue.
Hey, Google, what's the temperature in Sydney?
The temperature in Sydney right now is 67 degrees.
To check on the weather there. Then I flip back to the default voice to check the weather at the Googleplex.
Hey Google, what's the temperature in Mountain View, California?
In Mountain View right now, it's 59 degrees.
And of course, I gotta ask this question.
Hey Google, play Travel Commons podcast.
Sure. Here's the latest episode of Travel Commons, Surviving Quarantine Theater, Traveling for Food, playing on Google Podcasts.
Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons podcast.
And hey, if you have any travel stories, questions, comments, tips, rants, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio comment to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or the Instagram account at Travel Commons, or just post your comments on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Holiday Gift Guide for the Pandemic Traveler. Now, like I mentioned at the top of the show, hearing public health officials saying things like, it'll easily be the end of 2021 and perhaps the next year before we start having some semblance of normality, got my attention, and it got me thinking that this year's travel gift guide needs to be a little different. So I flipped through my 2020 travel journal, thought back through all my post-lockdown travel, and came up with this, my top shopping ideas for your pandemic traveler. Top of the list is comfortable masks. Now, if your traveler is a bandana or buff wearer, they're going to need a more conventional mask to get on a plane. And since they'll be wearing it for 2 or 3 or 4 hours straight, they'll want something a bit more breathable than the bargain basement masks that the gate agents give away for free. I'm a big fan of the Evolve Together masks. My daughter Claire turned me onto them. And I typically get them in basic black, although there's a green and a white version. They're breathable. They come with a pocket carrier for spares. And at $120 a mask, I think they hit just the right cost-quality balance point. Next, battery packs. With more things going contactless, kind of electronic boarding passes, digital hotel door locks, order ahead apps for food and beer, a dead phone is now, you know, it's more than just a bit of an inconvenience. And having that second or even third charge immediately available has become a lot more important. Now, I carry a mix of sizes, the Ancor PowerCore Plus Mini lipstick charger. For me, it's light enough for my pocket, while I've got a heavier, higher capacity Zendor PowerBank Super Mini in my computer bag. There's all sorts of makes and models and capacities and sizes on these. So the mix, I think, is a good idea, but these two work for me. Next on the list, TSA PreCheck or Global Entry. It's a perennial on my gift guides, but it's even more important now when we want to limit time spent in security lines because, look, let's be honest, no one is really staying 6 feet away from each other. It's $85 for 5 years of PreCheck, or, hey, look, if you're feeling optimistic about international travel opening soon, it's $100 for both Global Entry and PreCheck. And you might be able to use a high-end travel card like your Amex Platinum to pay for your traveler's application and then get that TSA fee credited back to you as a statement credit. Next on the list is a car phone mount, because if your traveler isn't buying the airline's HEPA filters are great pitch, they'll probably be doing more road trips, and so could probably use an upgrade from the phone in the cup holder trick. I like the simplicity and the low profile of air vent mounts. I've never had much luck with those dashboard suction mounts, and in a window mount is against the law in some states. If your traveler just upgraded to a new iPhone 12, I mean, you could go baller and get one of the new matching MagSafe vent mounts from Belkin. Otherwise, again, go to Amazon and there's a whole range of these air vent mounts. Another suggestion that's on every one of my gift guides is a VPN subscription. When you travel away from home or the office, you spend most of your time on public Wi-Fi networks. And in the last episode, and we just talked about this in the last section, we talked about the FBI reminding folks about the risk of these public networks. Help your traveler surf safe with a VPN subscription. Now, I've always used one of the top paid VPN providers, NordVPN, ExpressVPN or PIA, and really kind of a single subscription, which is usually for a year in the $35 to $85 range, will cover 3 to 5 devices simultaneously. So, you know, all at once, it'll cover your traveler's laptop, phone, tablet. The VPN providers always have some promotion going on, so it pays to shop around. A new item on the pandemic list is bring your own dining sets. Trying to navigate all the restaurant lockdowns and indoor dining limits, I've eaten more takeaway meals in my hotel room in the past 6 months than really I have in the prior 6 years. Instead of having your traveler breaking plastic knives on styrofoam plates, upgrade their dining experience to, like, a camping mess kit, complete with some upscale titanium forks that will never break. And hey, don't forget about the drinks. Maybe a couple of non-breakable IPA glasses for when they overstock the hotel room fridge, like I always do, or maybe a nice wine tumbler. Another new entry, coffee brewing kit. Now, in episode 139, I interviewed Coleman Collins about brewing the best hotel room coffee. Now, back then, it was more of a coffee geek snob thing that I never did, actually, because just about every hotel lobby offered free coffee. But now, those coffee pots are locked up with the rest of the free breakfast gear, and most hotels aren't restocking their in-room coffee makers because they're cutting down on servicing rooms during stays just to limit contact between you and housekeeping staff. So keep your traveler caffeinated with their own coffee brewing kit. I like keeping things simple with a plastic Hario V6 cone that you can just put over a coffee mug. But again, you could go, you know, full contact barista, go baller with maybe the AirPro Go Travel Press and a Hario Mini Mill coffee grinder. Next on the list, portable Bluetooth speakers. Now, last-minute restrictions and closures could have your traveler spending more time than they'd planned in their hotel room or Airbnb and needing some entertainment. Now, wearing headphones is okay for a day or two if you're by yourself, but when I'm with the family, I want something a bit more social. I'm a big Bose fan, as you've heard me talk about their noise-canceling headsets. So I like Bose's SoundLink Micro. But again, there's a pretty wide selection of makers, form factors, and price points out there to choose from. And how about a smartphone tripod? You know, it's tough to get everyone into an arm's length selfie and maintain social distance. A tabletop tripod with a smartphone clamp like the Manfrotto Pixie can help get those group shots, as well as, you know, maybe taking some night shots, maybe some cool time-lapse video, as well as making it a lot less cumbersome to take a last-minute Zoom call on your iPhone. And as always, the last entry is a travel notebook. Nothing fancy, no leather embossed cover, just something to jot down thoughts, ideas, observations, to-do lists while traveling in these unprecedented times. My first travel notebooks were the Moleskine pocket notebooks, but as I've said before, I've since switched over to Clairefontaine's. Their soft cover kind of fits better in the back pocket of a pair of jeans, and the paper is more fountain pen friendly. But if you want to go for a theme, then take a look at the different packs that Field Notes offers. That's it. That's my top 10 pandemic traveler list. I've also put this up as a blog post on the front page of travelcommons.com. If you like any of these ideas, look, maybe go over to the website, click through some of the links, and drop a little beer money into my Amazon affiliate account. And if you have any other ideas, send them along, and I'll mention them next month in December's episode. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is end of year don't leave me offers. Back in September, in episode 167, we talked to Matt Scholes, the chief credit analyst at LendingTree, about travel credit cards. Matt told us that their late summer surveys had showed trends toward people canceling travel cards and cashing out the points. But then earlier this week, American Express's CFO said that their credit card customers weren't cashing out points, and instead, they were stocking them up for travel. But the two comments aren't necessarily at odds. If you were laid off, you can use those miles to buy groceries or clothes via gift cards or on Amazon. But if you don't have to do that, the best value that you will get for those points will be on travel. You'll get less than a penny a point when cashing out Amex membership rewards miles on Amazon, but you can double that when you use them to book flights on, say, Singapore Air or KLM. So hoarding makes sense if you can, if you've got the money and you can afford it. Now, one of Matt's points in our interview was that card companies will continue to tweak their rewards to keep people holding and using cards because travelers are a valuable customer segment. So as we come up to the end of the year, it'll be interesting to see what those tweaks will be. Already, Chase keeps extending their 5x grocery and gas bonus on their Southwest card. And now Amex just announced this week a 10x grocery and gas bonus, as well as a 75,000 point sign-up bonus for their Platinum card. So the offers just keep on coming. Airlines and hotels are also rolling out their year-end offers. Back in the spring, all the majors, hotels and airlines, gave existing status holders a push, extending their elite expiration dates to January 2022 to keep all of those folks kind of happy and in the fold. So that settled everyone down in 2020. But now, with 2021 coming up and travel just still in the hole, we're starting to see some new offers. American opened the bidding last month, knocking 20% off their 2021 status qualifying mileage clip levels. You know, for example, 40,000 miles instead of 50,000 miles to qualify for Advantage Platinum. And they're also trying to do whatever they can for this year by counting flights from last month, October, this month, November, and then December. So the last quarter of the year, those flights count toward earning status in 2021. So the miles from flying this month, next month, will count toward your 2021 mileage levels. This afternoon, I got an email from United that announced their deal. United's status qualification methodology has gotten ridiculously complex over the past couple of years, but by at least one of their metrics, it looks like they're dropping their status qualifying point, PQP. Don't ask me because I can't even tell you. But they're dropping that clip level, that qualification level, by at least 30% and offering double points for flights taken in Q1, January, February, March of next year. Now, Hilton rolls in and I think made just probably the simplest and deepest offer, knocking 50% off of all of their status qualifying measures, stays, nights, points. That's it. Move on. Boom. Mic drop. All of this makes sense. Most status travelers are business travelers, and depending on which CEO is talking, business travel is down 85% for Delta, 90% for Southwest, and United CEO says it'll be 3 to 4 years before business travel is back to pre-pandemic levels. And you know, those business travelers are the airlines and hotels' most profitable customers. So expect to see Delta and Southwest and Marriott announcements soon, and maybe again this time next year if that, well, it's probably more like the beginning of 2022 before things start feeling normal. If that forecast turns out to be true, expect us to be right back here next year. Okay, that's it. That is the end of Travel Commons podcast number 169. I hope you all enjoyed the show. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. As I mentioned at the end of the last episode, I restructured the RSS feed a bit so that I shouldn't accidentally trigger any more episode re-downloads. And also, I moved the episode number from the title of each podcast to its own XML tag in the RSS feed. There you go. 2 3-letter acronyms, because we're talking about technology. So anyhow, I moved the episode number out of the title into another place in the RSS feed. So, I don't know, just to clean up how everything looks in the podcast apps. Also, a few months ago, but I didn't mention it, I tweaked my production workflow so that I was able to add chapter markers in each episode. So if your app supports them, and Apple Podcasts and Overcast do, you can skip forward to the next section, or say if you wanted to go back and listen to like that interview with Emily Thomas, you can get episode 166 and just go straight to the interview and not have to worry about skipping over all the other stuff. So anyhow, it's there. And if your app supports it, maybe you want to give it a try. As always, you can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, as well as asking Alexa and Google to play Travel Commons on your smart speakers. Now, I don't have an Apple HomePod, so if somebody can check that and let me know, I'd appreciate it. The links to all these sites, along with the RSS feeds, are on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website under the heading Subscribe. Right below that in the social media section are the links to the Travel Commons Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram feeds. If you're a regular listener, How about leaving us a review on one of those sites, one of the sites that you get the podcast from? It helps people find this podcast and sort of join our happy band of travelers. And as always, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, and Peacock on Twitter. You can put them on the Travel Commons page on Facebook, on the Travel Commons Instagram site, post them on the website at travelcommons.com. And thanks to everyone who's taken time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the website. I really do appreciate it. And hey, as always, take care of yourself, safe travels if you can get out. And until we talk again, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.